Old wives' tales are not as old, and not only from wives. Old wives' tales are not so old, and not only from wives. This is Dr. Herbert L. Varley, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. Old wives' tales are not so old, and not only from wives. For instance, many of the things that we have heard as an old wives' tale are things that our normal naturopathic doctors are telling to people all the time. The alternative medicines are being used. What witches got crucified 4 years ago, doctors are using today very readily. And the Indians used to use the bark of a tree, and because it was an aspirin. And when they had a headache, they would just take the bark of the tree and suck on it, and the headache would go away. Now, these are very common things. And it's very common things to take tea as a remedy for healing. There was a school, big school, back in this 600 BC, and Hippocrates was running around about that time, and he was the founder of the school. He was the father of medicine. And what he did, he took down all the old wives' tales, all the techniques that were used by so many people for healing different things, and made them into a code, a science, so that other people could follow it and have it, and other people could learn it and become doctors of the medicine. So they had maybe a couple dozen items that they used, and that was a lot. And when the doctors went through the school with Hippocrates, they had to really pay attention to these rules. And one of the things that Hippocrates said, as I've said before, he said, never give a patient anything that you would not take, and never give a patient anything that you have not first tried yourself. You want to make sure that you know it works, and make sure that you know it's beneficial. So, many things came along in subsequent years in the field of medicine to be beneficial, and one of them was bleeding people. They felt they could bleed out the bad humors, and then the good humors could have a better chance of being good in the body. They forgot to realize, or didn't know to realize, that when the body lost blood, the body became weak and became subject to many of the viruses and bacteria that were present wherever they were. So the old wives' tales told about have a bowl of chicken soup and go to bed and rest. Now, what was the entire medical therapy that was offered by that particular phrase and that particular statement? Well, number one, know someone cares about you. You know that someone is making you some soup, and they care about you. And they may have to ladle the soup into your mouth to make you feel better, but they say, there, there, and they smooth your brow, which doesn't mean anything, but the touch means a lot. And they put the ladle of spoon of chicken soup into your mouth, and then you slip it down, and then they say, oh, you look so much better. Oh, everything's going to be all right in the morning. You just get a good night's sleep now. And when you wake up in the morning, you'll feel just wonderful. And they don't know that. But they didn't realize that they were taking psychology 2, not even psychology 1. This is psychology 2 type teachings that teach you that thoughts are things, you know. You should learn in psychology 1, but there you just learn about thoughts. And you learn about things, and then you later put them together. But this is what they learn. And so this is what the nurses did. This is what the mothers did. And the mothers needed an apothecary. An apothecary was a storehouse of medical things beneficial to help the body become whole. And so what the mothers did, they had it called sugar honey. And they would take the urine from their healthy children, and they would use the urine from their healthy children to give to the unhealthy children. And the unhealthy children just jumped right back into perfect health, because all of the things that the healthy children had in their body, all the healthy stuff that is in their body, whatever you want to call it, was given to the unhealthy child, or the man or woman, or whoever it may be. And like wonder, like magic, they just perked up and became well. We have a book here in our library on healing with urine, and how it's being used by many medical doctors and many medical hospitals. And it is not one recommended highly by the profession, because of one simple thing, or maybe two or three simple things. One simple thing is that it does not make much money for the practitioner. Urine is rather inexpensive. And it does not take a great deal of intelligence to apply it. All you have to do is to con the person into taking, now this will make the medicine go down, the medicine doesn't taste so good, you know. Well, the urine doesn't taste bad, it's just that you're not accustomed to using it. And so that's what the mothers did. They put honey in the urine, and the honey made the urine go down, which made it very beneficial for the patient. Now, these were old wives' tales, you might say at first, but actually there was the universal mind speaking through the women and men and practitioners of the field of healthful medicine, and they put it to practice, and they had it function for them. Now, I have spoken to many naturopathic doctors, and as I spoke to them, I mentioned, among other things, urine as a healing agency, and they said, "Oh yes, we use it all the time, and we use it professionally too. We have it put into certain drugs, you know, take the essence out of the urine and put it into the drug without the so much liquid with it, you know, and it becomes a very powerful apothecary item for them." And they use it quite regularly. And of course, if you were to look up in the book of pills and look up uric pills or pills on urine or some, you would find many that are listed there telling you how the scientific companies, you know, like Pfister and so forth, go out to have their scientists put these chemicals into order. Now, a healthy body produces healthy, whatever it does it produce. What does it produce? It produces healthy germs. It produces healthy substances, you know. We should have a word for it, but I'm not into that stuff. So it has this healthy substances in it. Now, why do they take blood from a healthy person and give it to an unhealthy person? Because it helps them with a blood transfusion. Now, in early days, it didn't always work because they didn't know whether they had the right type of blood. And so they put the wrong type of blood in with a person with the right type of blood, and he didn't survive. And not because they didn't do the right thing, it's just that they hadn't had all of the details worked out yet. And all the details are, how do you figure out what kind of blood a person has, you know, and what condition it's in. Now, we're living in a society that is absolutely wonderful, and we are so familiar with old wives' tales, and we're so familiar with these things that we're sort of thinking that that's not real, that that's witchcraft. In fact, that's what many of the early people thought. It was sort of a witchcraft, and because they thought it was a witchcraft, they discounted it. They said it was not workable. Now, the witches have certain things that they use in their craft. And if you know anything about Merlin the magician and you know anything about other wizardry, and Harry Potter too, you'll read all about the types of things the witches use in their brew to conjure up very fascinating things. Now, some of the things that they conjure up are the idea that smoke comes up out of the fire, and then they blow the smoke toward the patient, and then the smoke grabs the patient's illness and takes it away. In early shaman teachings of Indian lore in the United States and around the world, wherever healing shaman work, these healing shaman worked with illusions. They worked with fire. They worked with all sorts of herbs and drugs. And here, the Mexican Indians use the peyote drug, because the peyote is the little pins, little buttons that come off of certain cactus, and they dry them, and it is a very strong hallucinogenic drug. And so as this hallucinogenic drug works on these people are in a controlled state, and the shaman are nearby, and so the shaman are chanting. And the people visualize that their ancestors are coming in to guide them out of their misery into total health. They are dreaming that the wise ones of all history are there to bless them and uplift them and fulfill them with healthful energies. Well, from my closeness with some of the shaman, I have been informed what they say. And as these people are under this hallucinogenic experience, the shaman are saying in their Indian tongue, "Your ancestors are here guiding you now, showing you the way, lifting you from this misery, taking this spell of evil from you, and you are now released from it." The very thing that they visualize is the very thing the shaman is planting into their consciousness in a very beautiful and powerful way. Now, we call these old wives' tales. We call these things that are strange and unusual. And yet, when the Russian armies were capturing soldiers from the other side, and they would take them to their headquarters, they would brainwash them. They would do the same thing to them. They would give them hallucinogenic drugs, like the truth serum is given, and in that, and they get them to tell what's going on in the enemy encampments. And that was what they wanted to learn. Well, now, we thought that was so strange and so unusual, but it wasn't really strange and unusual. The Japanese and the Chinese used to do that by putting matches under people's toenails and lighting them and causing them to have such great pain that they would tell anything to have it be stopped. And so, you see, awake, asleep, hypnotic, psychotic, psychological, however these fields are done, something happens inside the body that allows you to go contrary to what you've been doing. Something helps you to have a withdrawal. Now, John of God, down in Brazil, he is another one of these old wives' tales thing. And he does his best to discourage everyone from coming to him for healing, because he doesn't want a bunch of people who are dilettantes coming there wishing to be healed and not really wanting to be healed. When people have an illness for a long time, they usually are enjoying it, and they would feel very empty if they didn't have it. I know this has been my experience in working with people, especially in Italy and in southern Switzerland, where people had illnesses and they would like to do all sorts of interesting things to have these illnesses released. And we worked with them on cleansing themselves, and many good things happened. But this is something that happens historically and it happens presently. Medical doctors have the greatest power in the world and they do not use it beneficially. Or maybe they do. Medical doctors say to their patients, Now, you realize this is going to take a long time for us to get this healed. You realize you're going to have to come in here for a long time. And, of course, the insurance companies pay for it and stuff like that because the insurance companies have been hypnotized by the doctors first, you know. And so, and the hospitals and things. Now, I don't mean this in a negative sense. I just mean this in a sense that if the doctor were to say to the patient, "Well, Seville, I see that you're looking a lot better today. It looks like everything is falling in place for yourself. You won't be here so long as you thought. You thought you were going to have to be here 2 weeks, and you're only going to be here maybe another day or so. We're not kicking you out. We're not trying to make room for more patients, but you just don't need it anymore, you know. And you're whole and perfect, Seville. Seville, you're whole and perfect." And Seville says, "Doctor, I feel whole and perfect. Thank you." And then Seville tells everyone who comes into her hospital room, she says, "I'm whole and perfect. The doctor said I'm whole and perfect. The doctor says I can go home most any time. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Isn't that wonderful?" Everybody says, "Wow, you had a case that should not have been healed in a long time, and you're whole and perfect now. Wow, you must have a very, very good doctor." And Seville says, "Oh, I do. He knows what to tell me. He knows what to say, and he knows what to say, you know." And this is the point. When a doctor knows what to say, the patient lives another day and moves out of the hospital that way. It's really fantastic. It's a wonderful thing when you realize that you're in charge. You're the master. And if you're not, it's nice to at least have the doctor be the master. Mm-hmm. And the doctor to tell you that you're good and you're wonderful and you're fantastic. Ingeborg?
Yes, sir.
How long did the doctor want to keep you in the hospital when you had your hip ball replaced?
3 days.
How long did you stay?
2 days.
And he had you stay 3 days. And how did you feel when you came out?
Good.
You felt perfect or good?
Very good.
You felt very good. Okay. Now, why didn't he let you go home the first day? He wanted to observe you.
Yeah.
He wanted to watch over you. You didn't need to be there.
No.
But he wanted to watch over you. He wanted to see that everything was coming together perfectly, and he didn't want to have to chase you 50 miles up the mountain, you know, to find out what's going on. So, you see, it was for his convenience that he kept you there, not for your convenience or anybody else. But you see, this is the big point. And we sometimes fail to realize that, and when we do, we make ourselves a lot of problems. Now, old wives' tales are not so old, and not only from wives. We are talking here about medical lore. We're talking about medical facts. We're talking about doctors through the ages. And we're talking about how learning takes place through the ages. And what are the most beautiful... You see, nurses used to be... What? What were they called? Ladies of mercy? They would go in and work with the patient. There, everything's going to be okay. The guy's dying, you know. Oh, it's going to be okay. You're all right. You're okay, you know. And the guy's, "I'm okay. Okay." Or if he says, "I'm really not okay, but thank you for saying it," you know. He has the right to say, "I'm okay" or "I'm not." And if he says, "I'm not," then goodbye. If he says, "I'm okay," then it's hello to a new day. And it's wonderful. But this is what we want to do. So when you see okay next time, you tell him he's ready for a new day. And he's going to get it without any pay, but he'll like it that way. Because we all enjoy him. He's a good man, okay, right? Okay, now. So there you go. And that's what we have to talk about. And we have talked about it very nicely. Old wives' tales are not so old, and not only from wives. And as you can see, the subject is vast and endless, and I've had so many joyous, wonderful experiences in various avenues of it that I hate to use words to describe it, because the minute I use words to describe it, then people say, but it didn't work for me, it didn't work here, and it didn't work there. But I can say the thousands of places it did work. When Elmer Green, who is at the Menninger Foundation working on altered states of consciousness programs with us, he had his daughter come into his office one day, and his daughter said, "Dad, I got a cold." And his daughter was a grown woman and working with him. And he says, well, sweetheart, you have just finished working on this one examination, on this test that we're doing here. And what did we do? She said, well, we put a thermistor on my hand. I made 5 different temperatures on my hand. He says, okay, now make 5 different temperatures on your hand without the thermistor. Right now. She says, but I have nothing to gauge it. You get your mind. Okay, now take your mind and do it. So she visualized this at a certain degree, 93, maybe 96, maybe 95, maybe 94, 91, and she could feel the difference. And he said, okay, so what time are you going to be home for supper tonight? And she says, at 5. And he says, very good. And she walked out of the office, and she forgot all about her illness. She forgot all about, because her concentration on making the 5 points of her hand at 5 different temperature levels, without even knowing what the temperature levels were and that she did it, took so much of her attention that she didn't have any time to think of her cold. And instantly, she was healed. Instantly. Now, he's done that with his wife and with other people over the years beautifully, and himself. And he's been a marvelous person to work with. I've enjoyed it very much. Okay, so you have a good evening, and think beautiful thoughts, and dream beautiful dreams, and remember that I'm here to love you to pieces anytime you want.
Thank you.
I love you. I love you.
I love you.